Okay, yeah. This meeting, it was kind of hard to decide a title of the meeting because a whole lot of underlying issues sort of bubbled up to the surface real quick. But I think that, in general, the theme is connecting building information with EDXL. And within that, there's several themes that you could talk about. And if we could maybe just pick one of them, or possibly two today, because there's, you know, not that much time. But what really started all this was the emergency response scenario, which was done at NIST, and Michelle participated, and Rex has been participating. So, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me to talk about that. However, some of these underlying issues might also be worth talking about. So it's kind of up to the group what you want to focus on today.
Well, this is David Coggeshall. In talking with Michelle and trying to get our sub-project started, within the overall list of assignments that Alan put out from the workshop, Michelle's leading the floor plan mapping effort, and that's more or less the emphasis that I would like to see in terms of getting us started in that subgroup. That's pretty much how this came about. Deborah's also in that group. And we talked about some other people who we might want to bring in, such as Kimon Onuma and Robert Anderson from Vectorworks. So that's where I'm coming from, at least.
Yeah, I think so too. Focusing on mapping to the floor plan.
Along that line, I'd like to see how we're going to map alert, I guess the position or the location of alert onto those floor plans.
Well, the only caveat I have is that I was trying to break our assignment into the two parts. One is what it takes to create background floor plans that are browsable in some sort of format that could be shared between building owners and public safety. And then the second part is how to map real-time alerts onto those browsable floor plans. So
okay.
I was starting from the ability.
I think that's left out a couple critical tasks.
I do have a list of that if my hard drive hadn't crashed, it would be in, of the focus area and deliverables for the working group as a straw man for this group to poke at, and so we can get it revised and officially sent to Ellen. Toby, do you want to, is this topic that we want to take on for this meeting? This is just one of the many on the list.
I think it's a keynote item that there are two, but there's a couple perspectives that I think are missing from. I mean, if we don't have a general methodology of mapping name value tag pairs into space, then we've got nothing that we can share with the emergency responder. We provide no situation awareness whatsoever. But there's a couple things that are missing. One, oftentimes the underlying system and its reports isn't about sensors. Often, for example, in an older building, there are enough failures per day due to oxide on smoke detectors that unless you get three of them in a wing, you don't think that there's a fire at all. So often there's not a one-to-one mapping, but a layer in between of knowing the state of the building and what you can actually do. So there's that fuzziness there that needs to be considered. The other fuzziness is what is the purpose of the building, of the space, you know, because it's one thing if we're in an all-out conflagration and the building's going down and we'll share anything with anybody. It's another thing if we're talking about a relatively minor police call on the fourth floor and so we're not sharing any information from the other part of the building unless you have a warrant, sir. And so there has to be a mapping between business process and business purpose. Is this the public area? Is this the executive suite? Is this the research lab? Which is different than the physical space of its room 307. and without that layer, mapping to things like video cam networks and stuff becomes very problematic. And if we don't acknowledge those up front, we'll get low participation from owners, and so maybe we can feel nice about how complete it is, but nobody will want to use it, so it won't.
I think that's a whole security area. Is this Toby speaking?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, I think, isn't that your area from my workshop that you were responsible to cover that area as far as how we're going to secure and get into buildings? I think there's another
I don't want to pull this hole into that group, but I'm just saying that it's not just physically mapping sensors to space, but it's doing it in such a way that it allows other issues to be considered. So I just want to keep that perspective in place while we're talking.
If I hear you correctly, Toby, this is Rex. One of the key issues is some determination of whether or not a sensor is going to be sensor data is going to be released to the public. Is that correct?
Yeah, or some subset of the public. There might be. I'll share this with the police, but I won't share the ambulance. I don't know.
Okay. Well, yeah, the point that I'm, you know, sort of reaching for is that there, at some point, there needs to be a, you know, some sort of legal determination of when that happens, or when it's required versus when it's optional. And I think we probably need to look at that as one of the first things that happens, so that we're on good legal ground first.
That could take forever, though.
We at least need to know what the laws are at present. I don't happen to know that, so we should, even if we're going to work ways around it, we should find out what it is rather than have it come at us later and someone says you didn't take this into consideration.
I think we understand that there's a legal issue and also a permission issue as far as what you can and can't do to a building under what situation. And that's going to be considered and worked on. But I think for what we're trying to focus on is just how we're going to do it if we ever get there. So if we can do it and then deal with the legal part later when that comes into play in the other group, then, you know, the pieces will fit together. That's my opinion.
I don't think we can
solve everything, so.
I'm sorry.
I'm fine with that. I would like that to be noted, though. And in your notes, Deborah, if you could, so that we can point back to it and say, yeah, we did think about this, and this is what we decided to do.
Yeah, and I put that there, and I also kind of wonder if there's anything else that's similar that you could, any kind of similar situation that maybe those laws, you know, that it's a little further along. You know, that's why I like to think about the key box. You know, the key box is... Even the building owner can't have access to the key in the key box. What are the laws surrounding that? You know, maybe that could be sort of modified.
Okay. For those of us who are in OASIS, we have there is a legal XML technical committee, and it's one of those things that when we start talking about standards and what standards need to be, you know, surveyed and put on a list for consideration. For inclusion and what things we need to include, that would be one of them. But I don't know what other issues there are.
I'm going through an EIR. This is Bob Smith. I'm working through an EIR on a waste and hazardous materials huge expansion. And it's amazing how many standards there are, what's called standards, legal requirements about what needs to be done in terms of the control systems, access to control systems by the fire department. And so I can give you probably a dozen or two dozen very, very specific examples of stuff that we want to be alert to. The XML, legal XML group in OASIS I belong to for 2 years, and they may have some very general relevance, but I would not put them in the critical path, Rex.
Okay.
I think the idea of what the legal requirements are important, but I think getting a proof of concept that we can connect A to B and connect that to C under these conditions as a proof of concept for a funded project makes tremendous sense.
Well,
I'm also impressed with the amount of money from the economic stimulus. That's a tsunami, basically, of money that's going into capital investment programs, and it worries me a lot that there's going to be missed opportunities if we drag this proof of concept out for 2 or 3 years.
There's a lot of proof of concept out there that are commercial products right now. We're trying to standardize them. I mean, people know how to do this as one-offs. The challenge of what we're trying to do with standards is to make it so that these things are repeatable and can scale to a lot of different people and a lot of different decisions. Some of the best proofs of concept out there are not actually an emergency response, but say communication between different departments in the city of Chicago, where, well, we all know the openness and the above board actions that every city group in the city of Chicago participates in. They don't want to share any information with each other, but they find just even for closing a street, which might be an emergency response scenario in some way, they don't want to share their workings, they don't want to share their policies, they don't want to share their staffing with each other. But they are beginning to share PDFs with positional information and live sensor data driven from their internal business processes out with each other just so that they can get a simple interface that reveals nothing they don't want to reveal. I mean, the one-offs of proof of concept are out there in numerous places as one-offs right now. So I think we're moving past proof of concept to instead talk about, well, how do we solve this problem in a general way rather than a specific way.
And Bob, in terms of the things that you can provide, if you could provide that set of legal considerations, I think that would be a good step, and then put that in our repository, which we should, you know, be building for things that are important to be considered, not necessarily as, you know, things that we're going to include in everything that we do, but at least that we're aware of.
Right.
And Bob, where was that? Where are these coming from? Is it from Huntington Beach, or where are they from?
Well, the state and the feds have lots of code. Model fire code, earthquake code, air quality code, hazmat code, transportation code, blocking of access, rerouting detours, all these things are in legal environmental required documents, like an EIR. And if they're for the city of Huntington Beach, they're also going to be for the other 500 or so cities and counties and agencies within California, and I would imagine Chicago and New York and most other cities and counties. What I think Toby brought up is very important is it's not proof of concept that there's technology out there and there's products out there. It's more proof of concept that we can tie the capabilities for geospatial sensor building room facility like your excellent PowerPoint slide shows, Deborah, particularly the top 6 or 7 slides. And the bottom dozen slides dealing with specific standards, that's awe-inspiring in terms of its breadth and specificity. And I think BIMS has some capability to provide that type of proof of concept to building owners and building funding agencies and insurance companies.
And then maybe, Alan, could you talk a little bit more about the slide that you sent over, and when you had sent the message and you said, what we're really trying to do is this computer-to-computer connection between facilities networks via web services architecture. What we're really trying to, let me see, if you could follow our scenario, if you overlay on the attached, maybe you could map it to that. Could you talk about that a little bit, especially if everybody else is familiar with your workshop slides?
I'm not sure. I know a few, Michelle, and I remember David was there, Coggeshall. I don't think Bill was there. Rex was not there. We could talk about the slides, and I don't know, has anyone seen the scenario that Dave Holmberg and August sent out that Debbie's talking about?
Yeah, no, have.
Yeah,
no.
Yes, and
yes and no.
Yes, and Debbie also sent out a graphical.
Right, that's the PowerPoint that Bob's just talking about, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But the one that's the Simon Digital Key Box or something like that?
Right.
Yeah.
The one that it takes that OGC graphic and takes their placeholders for things like buildings and rooms and the county and the state, and then starts to put the scenario there that, like, this is, okay, now you have an alert in this room, and that would be there, and that would be there. And then Alan has subsequently sent this one from your workshop that it's, like, a different order, but it's kind of showing all the same parts. And to get those two to be more related, that's what I'm going to try and work on next week. I guess what seemed to be missing was the standard access point and what the requirements of a standard access point would be, because it seems like that's where you can really control who's sending, receiving, getting this information that you might have to have some, you know, really specific legal permission to have.
Right.
This is Rex again. I'm looking at this right now, and it is like a case study for why a service-oriented architecture needs to be developed. And it's fascinating that there are so many standards already that would be coming into play in this. That, you know, I'm sure that a part of what we want to do is just building a relatively large, unfortunately, a large diagram where certain existing standards already need to be plugged in. But I think a lot of things here are already almost ready to go. Not all of them, but a great many of them are.
Rex, are you talking about the scenario document or the PowerPoint with the three orange
PowerPoint.
Clouds? Okay, the orange clouds in it? Okay.
Yeah.
Does everybody have access to the scenario document that David sent out from our workshop?
Apparently I don't.
Okay, well, that's what I think Deborah is trying to map onto her slides. And
right.
The scenario is actually looking at my slide, the orange cloud slide from our workshop. So from that perspective is what the scenario was written on. And then Deborah is trying to map our scenario onto her set of slides. And there was some confusion as far as how things would work. So we had some discussion on this. I don't know if you want to go through the slide that we have from the workshop or not, but I'll be happy to do that.
Or maybe if you could point out the differences, you know, some of the important things that are missing, for example, the standard access point.
Right. Well, okay. I can talk about workshop slides. At least that's what I'm familiar with. So what's happening from the scenario is if the lower right corner where the buildings are, you have automated alerts coming from sensor that comes out. And so that comes up to what we call a BBS, a building, the base server for the BizAct. And that basically is a server that monitors a set of buildings, one or more set of buildings, and collect their set of events. So
excuse me, can this be put on the shared screen?
I think if you go to the, you can click on it. Peter's put it on. If you refresh the conference call page, there's resources at the top, and the third one over.
You can download them and follow along manually on your own.
No, I have the PowerPoint, but I think Alan's talking about a different diagram right now.
Oh, do you have the one from his called VIN 1?
Well, like I say, if Alan has it, could he put it on the shared screen?
I don't have access to the port. Unfortunately, we have a restriction here from this.
It is on the shared screen now, actually. Are you looking at the shared screen?
Oh, okay.
That's the
that's
one.
clouds?
Yeah, four orange clouds.
Right. Sorry. You're right. Anybody there?
Yeah, we're all here. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
Okay. The scenario that Debbie tried to map over to her slide basically came off of our slide in this slide, the one with the orange clouds. So automated alert comes from building via cap messages onto the baser, which is the BBS in the lower right-hand corner there. That BBS propagates its alert information onto BPS, which are proxy servers. That network of servers are all part of our BizAC network. It's the lower right corner cloud there, orange cloud. That was initially intended as an internet network or an IP-type network. So at that point, the BPS is going to talk to the CSA or the NG911. CSA is to the left, the lower left side, and the NG911, which is NINA, upper left side, or PSAP, which is your emergency responders, upper right-hand side. So if any of these, in the order that we expect to happen is in a fully functional city, you would expect to have the central station alarm people, which would be monitoring your buildings. So they would be getting alerts coming in from the cap messages. And from then, they either call back to the building and see if the building is actually on fire or if it's a false alarm. Once they verify the alarm or the alert condition or the building's on fire, whatever the situation might be, they either forward it on to the NG911 network, which is the upper left-hand corner. That is a future network that's supposed to take the information from any emergency cap message and route it to the proper PSAP, whatever city you belong to, the proper emergency responders will come to your aid. So they do the routing in there. And eventually the information will cross the top onto the PSAP, the local PSAP. But that local PSAP is going to dispatch their firemen and the policemen to your building. And so upper right-hand corner, those dispatch people will call the right personnel. And from the truck or from the station, they can log back into the building, just like Central Station did initially, to see what's going on inside of your building. And I believe this is where the roles and all the what Toby mentioned earlier about security has to be dealt with right here. Once you get back into the building, you can see what's going on inside the building and attack your fire in a proper way by finding out which floor it's on, which corner the building's on. Right now, all they're getting is a fire at location at some address, and they have to come to the address to find out exactly where the fire is, and they basically pull the trucks up to all four corners of the building trying to find out where the fire is. So what we wanted to do was send building information straight out over the network, eventually get to the PSAP, get the right people there, log back into the building and see exactly where the fire is so that they know where to attack right away and not worry about once they get there trying to figure out where the fire is.
Well, there's two things. One thing that I think is obvious when we're talking about this, before we even get to the position and the GIS and the floor plans and other stuff, that says to me that when a building sends something out, it has to send a GUID as well. Because, well, let's take a big building. Let's take a huge building. Let's take the Pentagon. At any given time, there's probably 70 emergency responders in the building. Two guys responding to heart attacks. One guy responding to a strange intruder thing, one guy, And if I have got a token for the heart attack on the 52nd floor, that's what I go back and get security information for. Wherever it may be and whatever else is going on. So one element I think that we have to have is an identifier of this session. Because that's part of my key back in.
And how do you propose to identify that?
I don't know. I'm just trying to say that there is a business need for an identification of that the building says, this is my event number 62, and you come back later and say, I'm the certified provider, whatever the heck that means, working on incident 62.
So they don't get the wrong one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, this is Rex, and I agree, and I think that, you know, what I would really like to have, and unfortunately I don't think anyone in this conversation is signed up to be in the practitioner steering group for the Emergency Management Technical Committee, that it exists under a memorandum of understanding between DHS, the Emergency Interoperability Consortium, EIC, and OASIS. And they're working on, right now, on a submission that's going to be presented to the TC, the Technical Committee, probably in February, maybe earlier, but I think it's more likely going to be March, for a situational reporting specification that will be the next large spec that we're going to work on under the EDXL family. And this is something that, you know, absolutely is going to be in there, and that's developing a way, because we've already had, you know, conversations about how it is you get a better ID, because the CAP messages, you know, once they're, you know, sent out, whoever is taking responsibility under the distribution element, the EDXLDE, to release a CAP message is going to be taking responsibility for non-repudiation. In other words, they're saying this is a valid, you know, alert. This is not a false positive. We have to get that first, because you know, otherwise we're going to have no way of knowing. So, but as part of that, I think that's the point at which this particular piece of information, this GUID, if we can come up with a suggestion for how to go about that, it would be important. So if there was a suggestion from this group or from the building information modeling community about that aspect of it, that would be something that we could then possibly work into the spec.
The way buildings are sending information out, you know, it's based on devices. So if you're looking at a cell phone call from a human being, that's a different story, and we have that in our scenario also. But within a building, imagine every device has some sort of ID that identifies it uniquely, and there are no two devices with the same address, for example, an IP address. But, you know, if you're looking at BACnet, some of these other guys, they don't use IP address. Anyhow, the point is, there's a device that sends out some kind of signal that says, I'm in alarm mode, and here's my identifier. So when you log back into my building, you can call me up by this identifier. And by the way, my buddy also has another identifier and so forth, that if all three of us are lighting up, then this particular floor really is on fire, or you should think it is on fire. Now what happens is CSA logs into our building and look at the floor plan and find out where these alerts are happening, and they are the one who's going to form another alert that either says that they're going to send either to NG911 or straight to the PSAP that says, hey, there really is a fire at this building, and whatever the event they call it, this is basically taking a bunch of device information, alert level, low-level stuff, and forming a higher-level smart agent-type alert that is sent out to the PSAP and with whatever identifier is required for the callback reasons. But when these alerts come out from the building, they actually have a callback or a URI or URL to log back into to the building, so when you use that URL to get back into your building server, you can then log in and using your proper roles and requirements to get into that building, authorizations, then you can look at your building. But that route, the whole route coming out of the building is just devices, and they don't know much as far as anything, any smarts. All they know is about themselves. Within the building server themselves, they can you know, have a smart agent that collect all these device information and send out one alert to the TSA.
But that assumes that the only information we're ever going to get is what is the current milliamps going through a particular sensor, which is without a context, it's meaningless. I was talking to somebody at that workshop who was busy doing multi-protein sensors where one sensor might be part of several systems, with the same information having different meaning in each one. There is also, I can imagine a scenario that looks something like ADT has taken the alarm, ADT has made 6 phone calls. ADT has some privileged access to the alarm monitoring system. They generate a GUID that says we have given you permission to attach to see anything on these 15 sensors. And so that GUID, which is a third-party generated GUID, which 911 and the building have been informed of at the same time, might be a very good business model for some certain classes of issues. So we don't want to. We have to write it for if the agent is entirely retarded and stupid and it's just done with advice. But the agent might. We should write it also so that the agent can be wider and have more room for intelligence inside it. What if the sensors do this, but because we've sent out this kind of message, we will also give you access to the material safety data sheets of the stuff that's stored in that wing of the building. That would be a... I think that's what... We have to think of walk through the scenario of the sensors, but then let's not describe it to limit it to only be sensor communication.
Well, I mean, when I say sensor communication, at the lowest level is what we're talking about. But obviously, there's something that what we call a smart agent, which basically a piece of software or something that listens to at the SI level, perhaps it's listening to a bunch of devices, and reason or has some logic that says, okay, if these 4 or 5 devices on my floor are going off, I'm going to assume that there's a fire. So I'll send off an alert saying that hey, there's a fire, and not necessarily send out a bunch of low level building information like temperature or smoke detector or whatever, but actually send out a cat message saying fire on third floor in some building. And maybe that particular message goes on to CSA or PSAP, and they would then call back into the building and do their own investigation before they send the units out. But the smart agent concept can be done at any level, within the building, within the server, at the CSA, at the PSAP level, when you get
all
the
data.
I need to interject something here, and that's that I think that at some point or another, there is a point in any sensor chain when some human being has to say, okay, they're taking responsibility for the non-repudiation, so there's going to be a contact point at which that responsibility is established. And that's something that's going to have to be worked out in negotiations or legislation or what have you. I don't think we can set it here. But when you're talking about having a smart agent, you can be talking about a decision support system that gets that information to the decider, whoever or wherever that is. And then, so the cat message doesn't go out on the network until after that non-repudiation has been done. So that's the point at which the GUID needs to be established. And however, whatever happens before that or on the return trip in terms of getting the digital firebox opened up for the responder, that's a service-level agreement that has been arranged beforehand.
Right. I think that's where CSA comes into play. At least that's how our PSAP in Montgomery County is looking at it. They don't want to get all these alerts coming into them. They want someone else to kind of filter it and make sure it's real before, a message is sent to them to send out to the troop. So I think what CSA does now as their job will continue to be that, when they hear from buildings a bunch of cat messages coming in, they still have to verify the situation before they call the right PSAP to answer. And in the future, we're talking about NG911. CSA has been sending that information to the NG911 and let them route it to the right PSAP. So, when you talked about requirements and laws and whatnot, I think there's some kind of understanding and contract work that's being done with CSA folks. And they're not around, and NG911 is not around, then, perhaps in a small town, then the PSAP folks can, if they're smart enough out there to actually talk back to the building, then the information goes straight over.
One way or another, those things need to. That's really the work. The working on the standards and getting these ground level arrangements, these negotiations done transparently beforehand, is what we really need to do. So that the whatever area, whatever group of jurisdictions it is, knows what systems they have and can work with them.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was talking with Alan about a little bit, too. And part of the reason I'm trying to make this graph is to end up having some kind of, being able to see this whole sequence of communication in one picture, and then using that like a background to start to look at which standards are really driving each one of those steps. And like the example that I used for him was, you know, one time I have this nephew and he had heart surgery and he only weighed 5 pounds. And, you know, it was really, really serious. And the doctors, when they were explaining it to us, they're like, okay, the surgeon is in charge until this point, and then he's going to go to this other place, and this other person is in charge. And, like, they literally hand off the responsibility for my nephew, and, we knew all of that, too, so that there was never a possibility of two doctors fighting with each other or something like that. I mean, you know, it was already in place. Who's going to be the final word on all that? And so I feel like if there was a way to see this whole procedure...
Debbie,
you know, and then,
right. I mean, I follow you, but you have to realize when we talk to PSAP folks and different folks in different areas, a lot of these things will not be in place. Like, for example, my graph is very nice. We have Central Station, we have NG911, we have PSAP, but they're not always going to be there. So then we have to figure out, okay, if they're not there, then how do we send billing information straight to PSAP? Do we go to NG911 if CSA is not there? Well, any of these pieces could be missing, or none of them would be available, in which case, the billing information goes nowhere. So
right.
That's the
limit. I think you put your finger on the real problem, which is getting the information, what is there or what isn't there, into the various communities. We need to stimulate the communities to look at those things for themselves.
All right. And that's where the staff comes into play, Deborah. The staff is what our concept of that is some standard access point where we – if any of these entities are in play, then we can send our alerts into that entity via the staff thing. And if they're not, if one of the bubbles is not there, we go to the next cloud. That cloud's not there, we go to the next cloud. If none of the clouds are there, then we're back to square one when nobody knows anything. So if they all are available, then, and this big diagram is in play, then we can just send information to one SAP, and then from between the two clouds, they'll talk to each other via another SAP and so forth. And even eventually, hopefully, when they talk back to the building, that interface, too, would be similar looking in some form of a SAP format.
Precisely. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Michelle. Sorry, my voice. I've been typing into the chat room, but this is my summary of what I've heard and my understanding of where we're going, and let's see if that's agreeable or that there's alert information that can come from many levels. Sensor 1, Sensor 2, et cetera, an event aggregation service, the building information server itself, the PSAP, any other level, that each of those information providers has an identifier, and that some alert information providers will have web service access, and their connection identifier will be made available when it's appropriate. So at the time that they say this is an incident that we're dispatching and you need more information from the building here, they would have the access. And at that point, what additional access that can then be retrieved may be policy-based. So maybe based on the other information. Let's see, Toby just said that this leaves out that the incident may need the identifier as well. Well, I think that the incident itself, the event, is a part of the identifier that you need for policies.
Okay, may I interrupt for a little bit? First of all, can we make sure everyone is on the chat session so that you can read what Michelle and latest Toby has typed in there? And secondly, I believe, Deborah, you've captured like 7 people who are in the meeting. Somehow I've got 8 people calling in, so one person is still missing on the roll call, and then actually 2 people are missing on the chat board.
Okay. I think Bob is missing, and maybe Kimon is on the line.
Kimon is not here.
Huh?
Bob is. Kimon isn't.
Okay, Bob is missing on the chat board. So Bob... On the session page near the top, I mean right below, like within the conference call details section, there is right above this bold RSVP. There's this one section with this a bullet that says point your browser to a certain link, webcons.soaphub. If you can point your browser to that and change your name from anonymous to Bob Smith in WikiWord, that would be nice.
Where is that on the conference page I'm looking?
It's sort of, I mean, if you see where attendee is, it's about like four blocks above attendees. Above the word.
Right above attendees.
Yeah, it's sort of four sub-bullets.
In this session, you can type in your questions, it says.
Right, right.
Middle of the first set of blocks, and then it says webconf.soaphub.org.
Right.
Yeah, do you do purple number access? It's 1P69.
Exactly.
Who's VNC2?
VNC2 is the shared screen server.
Oh, okay.
That's why you're seeing that chat session on the shared screen. That's where that server has logged into the chat board. So we're missing two people. I mean, we're missing Bob Smith and one more person. And that person is also missing on the roll call, actually.
Let's see, I have on the attendees Alan Vinn, Peter Yim, Deborah McPherson, David Conkleshell, Michelle Raymond, Toby Considine, Bob Smith, Rex Brooks.
Okay, David's not on the chat room.
Yeah, I've had problems with my wireless. I keep disconnecting here, but I'm okay if I'm.
Right.
I'll try to get on there as soon as I can.
All right. And who else are we missing?
And I've got notes at the at the bottom of this page, a bunch of notes, and I just want to question.
When you're all done, you can cut and paste the entire conference whatever you're taking notes in.
Right, right. At the end of the chat session, we will cut and paste this whole thing and put that back into the session page.
Okay.
I would like to.
Deborah.
I would like to make a comment about how this meeting came about. Was a conference call that I called for within Michelle's group to discuss the floor plan stuff, and sort of the word got out, and a lot of other people decided they wanted to be in on the call, and that's fine. And now we have a big call that's talking about the building service performance scenario in general and a lot of different aspects, but we're not actually touching on the initial subject of the call. So, I mean, we're almost an hour through it, and we haven't talked about floor plans. So that's okay, and this is probably a really good session to be having, but I would like to think that we could still schedule a call to talk about the floor plan element, which is what I'm trying to get started on. And
David, I agree with you, and I was just about to say I've typed in earlier the focus area and deliverable. My hard drive crashed, unfortunately, and so I'm pulling everything back off to get it. So I'm just typed that in. That Deborah, could we put that on the agenda to start in 10 minutes or something to go back to the focus area and deliverables specifically for the NIST floor plan working group?
I think if we've got 10 minutes between now and then. We've been at a big area of how we identify instance at the global level, how we put shims between sensors and information, which is good to get to the floor plan. Talk about how you can identify an instance. There's another different providers. Those are all very good things to drill down into the floor plan. In between, I'd like to add one perspective that it came out of an entirely different group I was in a couple weeks ago on space and spatial reporting and perhaps overlap. I was talking to, I was at a demand response group of the power grid. Demand response is when there's a potential brownout and they start negotiating and perhaps people offline, and there's middleware people in the middle who may be aggregating response or promising response and so on. They talked about being able to get GIS points up for their event, but also polygons going up because I've got multiple events and multiple buildings that are all within this space going up back for power management up. And it also struck me when you had the substation on the power grid, you might, the report might include this is the area where the power will be out. There might be flames in the substation, but there might also be a requirement for a policeman at each traffic light that no longer works within the polygon. So there's this middleware shim that goes right into OGC space nicely to get from that global view down to where the floor plans live. And we might also have an opportunity for overlap and reinforcement between the power grid guys and the emergency response guys on that area.
But when you're saying OGC, particularly, is there certain standards of theirs that that make it go so nicely, or how? Why is it that it works?
I'm saying that I have no particular expertise in spatial location, and other people do. And so, if I said I need to describe a big shapy thing that has all this stuff, different incidents inside it, I'd rely on them to tell me what a big shapy thing is described like in XML. I wouldn't do it
right.
Myself.
Yeah, it's called GML, and I don't know about a, we don't have a markup language for buildings yet that I know of. And that's something that would be very, very helpful. But building those composite shapes, especially once you get into 3D, can be really difficult. For 2D, we have GML, and it works fine. We've got that's already adapted in EDXLRM and EDXL have, and will be, further improved. So we do have that point.
What I was hearing in this other group was, but not only the need to have the thumbtax on the map, but also a relevant polygon is determined by the provider about what encloses those six thumbtacks.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the power grid goes down, and we can anticipate problems in this whole area, even though they haven't reported yet.
Yeah, there are ways to do that.
I understand. That's why I said hand that over to OGC. And I think now that zooms us down to the building itself, where we get close to the floor plans, we've gotten past the global issue.
I think one thing that when it comes to floor plans, and it goes back to the first thing I brought up in terms of legalities, is permission. There are a number of things that go in before a floor plan can be released. You've got a bunch of different considerations. If what we want to talk about is actually what we do when we've got floor plans, that's another thing. And I think that's probably what David was asking about.
Well, right now I'm starting to get mixed up. It sounds like people are talking about representing floor plans in some sort of XML markup language, which is yet to be invented and nobody is using. I thought that we would be trying to find ways to repurpose existing floor plans in mixed raster vector format, even things like PDF or SVG or whatever, but that it would be a target format that would be easy for a building owner to translate a normal AutoCAD file into, let's say. And if we're talking about a new format and standards that have yet to be designed, then we're years away from having any sort of large.
I wasn't talking about it. I was simply mentioning that we don't have one.
Yes, but other people are talking about polygons in XML format and so on and so forth. And I just don't think that there's a common.
No, that was in relation to OGC's GML for getting to the building location, not about the building itself.
Again, my concern or interest is, are we trying to find a way to repurpose existing floor plans into a usable format for first responders in the short term, even if it's just paper that they carry with them on the fire truck or PDFs that they display? It seems to me that at least here in San Francisco, we don't have that capability in place yet. in New York. Dee Dee at the conference, or at the workshop, talked about Local Law 26 requiring all building owners of a certain size, 10 stories or more, I think it was, need to submit their floor plans in an electronic readable format to the fire department. Now, I'm not sure what the parameters are for that, those formats, whether it's PDF or AutoCAD or whatever it is, but I mean, that's the starting point I'm looking at. If you've got a local law someplace that says building owners must turn something in, then what are they going to turn in right now? Not what's a future format that we could tell them to develop, because that's a long ways away. I have, you know, potential case study opportunities here in San Francisco. I'm ready to move on them. And I thought we were going to do a proof of concept in that regard without inventing a new standard at this point. So maybe
In my opinion, I think it should be PDF. I mean, there's just too many incompatibilities between systems, between, you know, it, literally the scale, too. You can have all these issues about, you know, micro station to, you know, from one CAD to, or one BIM to another. You have all kinds of problems with scale, literally, like, the building looks like it's 2 inches big. And where it's, if it's PDF, then it's fixed and it's, you know, nobody else is editing it and it is what it is. It has a date on it. If it's wrong and out of date, then that's a different issue. But I think trying to use the actual, you know, modeling stuff, it's just, there's too many problems with it just in normal life, let alone if they need to be able to read it on any kind of device.
Are you saying that when a building floor plan that came from CAD drawing or something, you want to convert that to a PDF to present it on the screen to the first responder?
No,
well,
I think
only because you can read it. Anybody?
I don't think that's the end game. You know, 10 years out, we hope we're doing something past that. But I think that's definitely the best way to get something, you know, in someone's hand tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's fine. I'm with David, just trying to figure out how to do this now versus, you know, we're not going to invent a whole new thing now because a lot of old systems doesn't have a BIM, so.
But they all can print something so they can all produce a PDF. A PDF can look as dumb as a scanned TIFF, in which case you can't do much with it, but at least you can see something. Or PDFs might can have interactivity information in it, and there's a bunch of products that are shipping from a variety of vendors. I sent a link to one in the chat room earlier that allows you to come up with queries that produce interactive PDFs that have more information, like current sensor readings or current MSD information or current other stuff. Those products are available from a lot of people.
Well, how do we map a sensor location onto these PDFs?
I think that's...
If a sensor comes out and has, you know, saying I'm geospatial so and so, and you have a PDF document, how do I map myself onto your document?
Well, wouldn't the PDF be the sensor design layout in the first place? I mean, isn't there a drawing that was done by that, you know, engineer that shows where they are?
The drawing, the base level of the floor plan. Whether it's a PDF or a JPEG or a scalable vector graphic, regardless of the format, the base floor plan is something that's still just going to be input into, if it's a computer system, that you can then overlay that sensor data, the where objects are, all of the other information that you need. It would act as an image that is at the base level, which you can add information on top of. So in and of itself, yes, is the primary tool they may have right now is just a printout. And maybe what they have to actually do is use a colored marker to put some symbol on their printout. That doesn't preclude us from being able to say this is where it belongs on that floor plan. As long as we have our scaling and everything and coordinate system agreed upon.
Michelle, when you're talking about the base level, is that the thing that you're trying to develop, or is that the PDF document itself?
Well, it would probably vary at first from whatever is available because different different buildings, different things. That base layer, generally you like it to be just the, where are the outer walls? Where are the rooms? Where are the doors? Where is the architectural things that aren't supposed to have moved? I like what was said at the workshop about New York City and their, that they require at least an electronic update of their floor plans yearly. That whole set, they were also saying most of the time what they're getting is a JPEG or a PDF. So that's probably the starting point, and we can't necessarily say what is on that base layer.
I think
the NIST group can do is define what they would like to have on that base layer so it's not cluttered,
and then
what other data wants to go on top.
I think that, you know, from my experience and interaction with fire departments and so forth, is that the current requirement by code in most places is to be able to post evacuation floor plans in the elevator lobby so that people know where they are, where the rooms are, where the exits are, and so forth. So that is a precedent in terms of building owners being responsible to come up with an uncluttered floor plan that just has basic architectural spaces with key areas like stairwells and so forth. I think starting with that as something that would be fairly easy to get from most building owners, and considering that like ground zero or level zero, level one, and it could be in a PDF format, it could be in a JPEG format, it could be raster. That's really sort of the baseline that we need. And even if fire people just had those available to them, it would be a big step ahead. I think getting into this whole area of where are the sensors and so forth is advanced compared to the primitive nature that we need to start with. It's not simple even to do something like PDF because you have to find who has the floor plan. A lot of times the building owner only gets deliverables from architects or engineers, and it's actually those contractors that are holding the masters and so forth. So just to make a PDF, you know, short of scanning a paper drawing and making a PDF, to make a PDF directly from a CAD drawing is going to require some coordination in and of itself.
May I make a suggestion? Oh, I'm sorry. I have a suggestion whenever you're done. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'll stop for now.
Okay. There's a new thing that's going to, it's probably going to be one of the first NBIMS candidates, and it's called COBE. It stands for Construction Operation Building Information Exchange. And it's meant exactly for that transfer from the architects and then the engineers to the contractor, then to the owner. And it's basically the architect delivers a schedule of every space, and, you know, this is office space, this is that, you know, standard, get classified in a standard way, which is OmniClass. And then the contractor, that's where they put all these, like, MSDS sheets, you know, any of their submittals that they have. It's a way to organize all of that stuff to hand it over from down each step of the line. And I think that because it's organized and it can easily go in and out of XML, that the COBE system would be a good thing to look at as far as being able to get a bunch of things that are already organized the right way. And it also is something that ends up being easy to work with for anybody at any point in that chain, because you can just use Excel, you can just, you know. But I think that could help this a lot, because you've got all this complex underlying stuff. You want to go out and get it, and it needs to be organized, and this will be an organized way for it to be. I don't know how you'd set up some of the questions that you guys might have from that data, but I think that that would be a good thing to look into.
Go
ahead, Toby.
I think that that the PDF makes a great start at base level, because if what it is a 30-year building, there's old building, there's no COBE in it, and we have a crayon drawing of the evacuation plan that can be scanned. Having been scanned, be put on the PDF and display on my PC, my iPhone, my Android, my whatever we want. So that gives us a baseline functionality, is a purely static PDF. So that's level one. Level two, which is some interactive information, can also be handled by PDFs and with a variety of products that are already shipping on the market. Where do we put last stuff? Where do we... the link that I put in earlier is somebody just makes a toolkit for people to build those. I'm not saying they win, but I'm saying that if the goal is how can we put something that somebody in San Francisco could regulate today, which could have deliverable results tomorrow, that's the path to it. Longer term, I think COBE's dead on as a good way to get it. There are still some issues with the very lightweight display of 3D information. There are some things that are going to affect COBE coming up. There may be a very lightweight 3D BIM standard that's being proposed by some of the CAD vendors as an XML format coming up in the real future. It's meant to be smaller than IFCs, lighter weight than the IFCs, but mappable down from the IFCs, and that may be the right format, but it's not here today. But I'm very hopeful that it will be here presently. But if the challenge is what we're going to do today, we have I have it in crayon, I'll take it. I have it from a CAD drawing, but it's static, I'll take it. I have it from a BIM, but it's still static, I'll take it. And if I come back and contact the building and say, tell me about what you're seeing on the third floor now. There's a variety of existing software products that will allow interactive and on-the-fly addition to in PDFs to display information. So that's the fast, get something here now approach, I think.
I'd like to raise one question about the usability of PDF versus JPEG in a web browser development environment. Everything we're doing on the common operating picture for the outdoors mapping environment, we also want to do indoors with building floor plans, and that is to use a basic standards-compliant web browser as the display engine, and that displays are made up of web pages which use standard elements, JPEG as a background. So my question is, if you have a PDF, does that work? I'm not sure. Can that be sourced into a web page as a background, or does it have to be a generic raster file?
I think JPEG would work better in that instance, David.
Then I would say, you know, that my inclination would be to start with a JPEG as a raster background to provide context. And then on top of the JPEG, you could have SVG. You could actually have HTML area definitions, but a little more modern would be SVG, which is fairly universal. I mean, Safari, Firefox, Chrome all recognize SVG. That could give us hotspots on top of a JPEG background that represent either room definitions or sensor locations or whatever.
I agree with David on that. As far as implementing and technology concerned, JPEG is much easier to deal with than PDF. You know,
well,
PDF
is the fit inside SVG. Would we really want to do just SVG isolated from a JPEG background because they scale differently and you have all kinds of rendering problems, or would you want to have say just SVG, since SVG, any SVG element can include JPEG as a background element.
That's more or less what I'm saying, is that the background, the detail that's not needed to be live objects can be flattened into a raster background like a JPEG while still
But that's part of the SVG spec, so I'm saying we don't need to say JPEG and SVG. We should say just SVG if we're going to say that.
Well, I think that the difference being that a JPEG is easy to get to if you're turning in a floor plan, but you don't have the responsibility for the interactive portion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so if somebody, this is another really big question, is who's gonna shepherd this composite drawing from different architects, contractors, and so forth, get it into a composite, make it into a JPEG or a PDF, then they have to get it. Then there's the question of marrying it with potential live objects, which are the safety elements, sensor locations, and so forth, things that you
and,
want.
And that's why I have a problem with what you propose in a big way. And the problem is, if I take all my floor plan, all my spatial information, and have it be a pixel-by-pixel defined object with no intelligence, and then I put a scalable vector thing on front of it, which may render as half size on another screen, and so now this sensor data that have been carefully positioned in this vector format has nothing to do with the underlying floor plan because it's just the way SVG works, then I've come up with something that is twice as confusing as if I had nothing.
Well, I'm saying that if you have all the technical capability in your own shop to produce the end product, then what would be a good end product? And in my experience, it's a combination raster vector format where all the detail that does not need to be active can be flattened into a raster background, and all the elements that should stay active, like room perimeters or safety elements, can remain as vector elements on top, which can be SVG on top of the raster. They're produced in the same run. It's not like somebody produces a JPEG and then somebody else produces the SVG. They're both coming from the original vector source. And at least I've had some experience in doing this and some success with it. And what I was hoping is that we could get going on a proof of concept to show what it would look like without trying to decide what the best way to do it is, but just try to show what the end result would look like so people could start to get a feeling for, oh, wouldn't it be great for the fire guys to have this kind of information? It seems to be we're a long way from actually engineering a final solution here, but it seemed like a proof of concept was what we were after.
We've got the queue in our chat space. Would that be something we could use? Okay, Toby just took his hand down.
Let me
hand
it. The queue works. Deborah, if you're looking at that and if you want to sort of get the meeting to sort of queuing people up for comments, that would be useful.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm just rapidly typing down all these notes here. And I think there's a whole lot of things that are going to have to get put together because there are, like, the same way it opened up these Pandora's boxes of all these issues earlier this week, there are some legitimate problems with how you're rendering things and the accuracy of these drawings. That's a whole separate problem. I think there's a lot of expertise here that you just have to be able to assume that there are people that know how to make simpler floor plans, and there are ways that you know that you can stop this distortion. And I think that, you know, naming the dots kind of stuff does have some standards above it. I think that hopefully we could spend some time now, or, you know, the rest of this time talking about what it is that you guys really want from the floor plans. Because, yes, the exiting and the, you know, like what you would see in a hotel, how do you get out of here in a fire, that kind of super simple level is something that seems like that could get defined. I don't know. So I see Michelle and Toby both have their hands up. So I'm going to just start typing again, and you guys go ahead. But if we could
okay.
On those things. Yeah.
All right. This is Michelle. First, Alan, is it okay if I talk about the other groups in the NIST workshop and what they're asking for?
Our group you're talking about?
It within NIST, the group, not just the floor plan, the one that Scott Parker's doing?
Sure.
Okay. Scott Parker is the lead over, I'm the lead over the floor plan group. Scott Parker is the lead over, let me get back
That's
to the
content.
List here. Is over the cap message NEEM DE format. So what is the message? And one of the things that he has under his queue of things that he needs to provide is the list of information that is needed. So when people start talking about sensors, or they need to know where the floor plans are, they need to know, excuse me, where the staircases are, water, etc. He has a due date that he would like folks to send in their required and desired element list of things that they would like to receive information about. It's not just floor plan things. It could be event things as well. So if folks want to take that portion of it offline from the floor plan discussion of what the elements are that are needed, required, and desired within an alert, send those to Scott Parker. And he would like them by the first. And then I'd like to get into what the floor plan working group, what our focus area and deliverable is, and how the group of people here might want to participate.
Okay, that would be great. Do you want to do that now, or Toby, do you want to talk first? Or?
You got a quick one, Toby?
I've said this a couple of times. I've got a link that I've put about on the first page or so of the chat list. It's a product. I'm not proposing that we use this product, but it's a sort of proof of concept that somebody is out there. If it isn't in XML format. I do like the SVG. I would love for SVG to arrive in a real way that it hasn't yet. But I would like for it to come there. But in terms of the results, if it were in SVG, I would like to put out the link that I put on the screen, and its interactivity as a straw man for how sensors should display on floor plan.
Yes. I've grabbed that link already and taken a peek at it, and like what I see and think that we need to include it in our study. All right. Toby, are you done for that round?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, put your hand down, and then if you need to speak, then put your hand back up. And anyone else who sees the screen and wants to interrupt, click the hand icon that's in the lower right. It says raise your hand. It's next to the blank space. The other one is Z's that toggle that you're either asleep or away. That way I'll know, shut up and let somebody else talk. For the floor plan working group, which came out of the NIST workshop, and the NIST workshop was on building information exchange for first responders, the focus area and deliverables that I initially put out and want people's consensus on are four main ones. The floor plan representation format. The second is the information content. The third are the spatial temporal correlations. And the fourth is space naming conventions. And these hit upon a lot of things we've talked about. That first one, representation format, that is how do you translate data from one format to another. We do want to try and one of the things from the session we'd said we want to use NBIMS as much as feasible. We want to use the Industry Foundation classes. We want to look at what's available from that whole world, and specifically use the NBIMS where feasible. Now, that doesn't answer the backward compatibility question. And that's what this portion of the group would also be looking at. What if we only have PDFs? What if we only have a CAD system that doesn't have all the information? How do we? So the representation format and the translation formats, that's one subsection I'd like looked at. The other, information content, this is the second one. This is where I see how do we break the information into the pieces. And the talking about what is that base layer, and when it's put on a computer, it's best done as a JPEG. It's fastest. It's clear. But what are the additional ramifications of that? What goes into it? So the information content. What belongs on that base layer? Is it just the outer walls? Is it just walls and doors? Are there other elements that belong on that base layer? Next, within the information content, is metadata about the building and areas either in or near the building. So defining the spaces within the building, metadata about it as far as you can get out of this. There's an egress route. There's defining what that metadata is. Then the third in that is sensors and other objects that are within the floor plan. So that's the information content part of it. Spatial temporal is sensor events that are happening within that site. And the architectural objects that are within that site. And then things that may be moving, mobile objects. Those may be pre-placed emergency response objects. Oxygen that they grabbed from the oxygen station to be able to take to someone is an example. And then also objects which change their state. That may be things like a shutoff so the gas has been shut off to the building. It also may be the elevator. Which floor is it on? And then the fourth, back to the fourth main group, is the naming conventions. How do you name the spaces in around the building? And the first responder naming assignment or event, perhaps you're familiar with, when a fire chief comes on and he becomes the incident responder, he says, this is side A, this is then going clockwise B, C, D. Let's say it's a square building or rectangular. And everyone works off of that from then on out. And it is feasible that another event at that same site, different sides of the building may be named A, B, C, D, depending on where they're setting up as they're staging in their entry point. Although it's often common practice that it is the, quote, front entry. And then finally, the associating the data back into that floor plan. How do I take the objects, how do I take these things that have been named and get it back into the floor plan and where it belongs on the floor plan? So what I'd like are comments on, have I covered what is expected from this for deliverables? And folks who may be interested in taking on particular chunks of that.
I can help probably with the naming for sure, because I hope to be joining the OmniQuest working group, but, you know, there is a table that's specifically for those kind of things, and it's missing a number of things, like it doesn't have the fire control room on, doesn't have a number, but there, it is in place, and somebody's talked about it and looked at it, and I could probably just take a sample building. I think that when I first started talking with David, he said, oh, well, I would, you know, I have this building here. Why don't we do that? Maybe what we really should do is try each one of these things with stuff that exists. And so, you know, go through just a sample building and number everything the way that it should be named and numbered, and then see how this all shakes out.
Can I make a comment about that? Coming up with a naming and numbering scheme that other people aren't following won't do us any good. And to the degree that buildings are extant and floor plans are in place and they're in the lobby and they're named and numbered already by the owner, I think that's something that we have to accept and accommodate. I don't think that we can expect to create new layers of new naming conventions and so forth inside the source documents that are coming from the buildings.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean. Right, not coming from the Right, okay.
So I think, you know, those kinds of standards are great for encouraging people to develop their internal documentation in a conformant manner, but it seems to me that the process we're talking about starts with getting a floor plan from a building owner and taking it from there. And so we need to, we may go back to the building owner and say, you know, here are a couple of rooms that don't have names or numbers, or there's an ambiguity between your floor or level naming. So we may critique it in such a way that they may want to change it and resubmit it. But I don't think that we can go impose a new additional requirement on every building owner out there. I mean, I think the biggest problem with this whole thing is it's going to be really hard to get buy-in and participation by building owners unless it's extremely easy for them.
Hey, Alan, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I do. I just want to follow up on what David just said and what Michelle has on her list of things to do for this floor plan. And what David was mentioning, I think, is very important in respect of what the owner has laid out for their building, what they mean by first floor. Does it mean floor one or level one? And what does the fireman call that same thing, a lobby or floor one or whatever he calls it? But no matter what we have out there as far as buildings are concerned, however the owners label their floors, there has to be some sort of mapping that goes over to the first responder, what they recognize as their list of floors and how to get on a certain floor. And that's what we need to label on these floor plans. For example, as a viewer, when you click on F1 or L1, you expect to bring up floor 1 or level 1 and not some funky number that comes out of these standards that nobody understands. So that's just my point. I'm not sure if it's on your list, Michelle, but I don't quite see it as far as a standard for labeling floors.
Okay, since my hand's up next, I'll say in response that I will make sure that that's specifically called out, standard for naming of floors. And you made exactly the point that I had raised my hand to make, so I don't need to make it. But I do want to say that further, let me see if I put it in the notes. Did I put in here the issues? I will paste in. I'll paste into the chat room the list of issues that were intended to be addressed, or questions and things that had been raised. So I'll paste that in just a moment. And the next, I'll take my hand down. And David, your hand is up next.
Yeah, I was going to say that how the building owner has his spaces identified and labeled. Is the starting point. Then there is a requirement like Local Law 26 in New York to turn that in to the city or whomever. Now, I think that's going to differ from city to city or county, municipality, et cetera. But it may go into the fire department. It may go into the planning department. I'm not sure where the different candidates are. But once it gets to the city or the public safety responsible entity, then a follow-up action is the fire department doing building inspections. And as part of a fire department inspecting a building, they should be starting with the floor plans that were provided by the building and identifying any ambiguities or contradictions or whatever that they see between the way it's labeled and what they understand the labeling to mean or what they prefer. So there would be a chance for the fire marshal or whomever to feedback to the building owner, we would really prefer if you name things in this way or whatever, and maybe adjust the nomenclature at the source. But I have to point out again that it's going to be different in every single city, county, state situation in terms of who is receiving the floor plan and what they're going to do with it once they receive it. Because once they receive it, it has to be put into a system of all the other floor plans that the emergency responders have access to. And it has to be conformed to a format that can then be distributed to those emergency responders at a minimum on paper, but I'm sure nobody's interested to talk about that, although I think that has continuing importance. But if the floor plans are to be available to multiple agencies, then there has to be a standard electronic distribution format that transcends the differences between the source materials coming from different building owners.
Okay. My hand is up next. This is Michelle. I agree with what you're saying, David. And one of the places to look for the recommendations that we need to address is coming from the National Incident Management System, NIMS, and their typing. So that is one of the things that it was deemed by the NIST group. And I would agree, and I think this is something that has been brought up also within OASIS, the Emergency Management Technical Committee, that we use recommendations that are made by NIMS typing wherever feasible. And that's something that we may find clashes between NIMS and NIBS, so the Incident Management System and the Building Information Model. Naming conventions, and that's where this group, I think, needs to then make a recommendation and put it into practice and do something with it so that we can put it in front of real users and see what the results are. Alan, your hand is up next.
Oh, I just typed it in the bottom there, but my point was just if we have a way of naming these floors ahead of time, and we have this list and we hand it over to whoever it is that's going to do the translation of either PDFs or JPEGs or whatnot, then as they create the floor plan for floor 1 or L1, whatever it is called by the firemen, then they have to name that file the same or so that it is recognized in the same way, so that when the fireman goes into a building, he wants to bring up floor 3, he'll type in F3, and it'll bring the right thing, the right PDF or the JPEG onto the screen for them. We can't have different buildings calling different floors different things, and there's no convention. Like they would say, it's going to be a big confusion of what's what. So if they had a list ahead of time of what to call each of their floor, and they can pick from that list, then, you know, as part of the screen that logs into the building, here are your available floors. Pick from one of them, and they recognize all the different symbols, and they type in F1 or L or rooftop or whatever the correct two-character representation is, then it'll bring up that proper floor. But something that the first responder has to agree to, and everybody has to be trained to recognize those symbols of characters, that's my suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Toby, your hand is up next.
I fear that trying to enforce a standard floor numbering scheme can also be a quagmire. I just think of the building I was in Atlanta that had two floors of conference rooms that were above ground on one side of the building and were below the lobby, which was ground floor on the other side of the building, which was had a mezzanine before the first floor was above that. We think of the mini hotels, Trolley's hotels going in, the French owners that have the zeroth floor and the first floor. We have a lot of different things coinciding at once. Even if we decide how to name them for emergency response, it can be confusing to the fireman if he's going up to what he knows to be eighth floor and he sees sevens in all the doors.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Rex, you're next in the queue.
I just wanted to say that, we have a mechanism that we've developed in the Emergency Management Technical Committee. It may seem like it wouldn't work in the teeth of an emergency in the heat of it, and it may not. But in terms of sending messages and developing the connections that especially service oriented architecture can use, we have something called a value list URN, which says if you have a naming scheme, whether it's in a building or it's a jurisdiction or it's your fire department, publish it give us a keyword reference, and anytime we're dealing with you, we will use your list. And so there won't be any, or there shouldn't be any confusion. And if there is any confusion, then you need to say whose list, and we send you back the list that we're using. You can go look it up if you need to.
What's that called, Rex?
A value list URN.
Value list URN. Okay.
All one word, URN, capitalized.
Okay.
Value and, V on value and L on list, also capitalized.
Okay, value list URN. Okay. And that's like a, really just a translator. So it seems like a lot of people are saying that, you know, there's going to be this NIMS typing, there's going to be OmniClass, there's going to be the owner's own things. And
exactly.
What you really need is some kind of translator that can quickly get to the preferred image, the preferred names of things, the preferred whatevers. But, you know, the fact is those things are there, and the seventh floor is below the eighth floor, and, like, that's reality, no matter what you call it.
Yep.
So it's like this translator needs to be functional, needs to work.
We have a lot of work getting people to implement this, but once we get it implemented, there it should cut down a lot of confusion.
Okay.
Can I go?
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay. David?
Yeah. I want to point out that I think it will be next to impossible to go back to building owners and have them change their nomenclature, because it's built in to so many things, existing drawings, files, for instance, where hazardous materials are stored in room names or numbers. It's just throughout the system. So I think we have to unilaterally accept whatever the owner nomenclature is. However, we ran into this with resource typing for NIMS. The FEMA 120 types didn't actually match up with, say, California's fire scope and so forth. And so we had a lot of debate about this, and the upshot was that you need both. You need to stick with the nomenclature that people are familiar with, and then in a side-by-side column or whatever, you can have a second designator that follows a standard, and then that's a mapping, and I would use the example of three basements, three underground levels, and one building might call them B1, B2, and B3. Another building will call them A, B, and C, and in either case, I don't think we're going to be able to get the owners to change that. But if we decide that our standard for basements is I'm just picking a notional idea here, say it's U for underground, U1, U2, U3, whatever, then we need to make the correlation between what the owner calls it and what we're going to call it. If what we're calling it is something that is required to be conformant to a standard in order to work, you know, programmatically with other things. If our system requires that floors be named in a uniform way, then that's a uniform naming scheme in addition to the owner's naming scheme. And so I think we're adding our naming to their naming, not changing their naming. And this is particularly true when something like a floor is used as the first letter of the room number, like B20 or C12 or something like that. So I would say that we have to be totally non-invasive in terms of owner nomenclature, and that we have to be able to adapt to whatever is given to us.
Okay, let's see. That
Froze up on me, so I can't get it back in.
I'm sorry, Rex, repeat.
my browser froze up on me, so I had to force quit, and I can't go in and change anything yet.
All right. So are you saying you want your hand
just
to be up?
Eliminate me. Eliminate me from the queue if you can.
I did. I think you did. You did when you left. Okay. I'm top on the queue right now, and what I'd like to look at is back on where I'd said the four main areas, floor plan representation formats. It seems that David Coggeshall is probably a very good point person for that. For information content format, and I extend that to clarify it, that it's the inclusion and insertion within a floor plan. And then the next one, the spatial temporal correlations, perhaps those two need to be combined. And then the last one, the space naming conventions, I see Deborah McPherson as a point for that. And I could be the point for either spatial temporal or the information content formats. Toby, are you interested in the format, or Rex? Rex being with the looking at the other. Is there anyone who wants to
heading up that effort? But I really like the direction that says it's XML based, because that means that we can probably attach policy to it at a later time.
Mm-hmm.
SVG
okay.
Gives us a lot of function.
Then for the time being, what I will do is combine the two and three, have my name next to that as the point. If David and Deborah are amicable to being point on those two other topics.
I have a question, Michelle. Where these four topics, are they in the chat room or on the session page or someplace?
On the session page. Mm-hmm.
Or on the session page?
Yeah, you go all the way down, I've got to been keeping notes on everything.
And I'm going to modify them a bit to make sure that we get in the points that, like, the questions that have been raised specifically, like Alan's on the. I'm sorry, here, I've got to go back onto. I'm sorry, I'm finding a cold and not enough sleep because of the alarm at our own house. He said floor plan naming conventions. And so, yes, putting that explicitly into that list. And then having that as our starting place. The other question is, can we use this BSP space? Or when I came in, Deborah, you were talking about a specific space. Where would it be best to post a wiki page that people could be using to exchange information? Is this BSP group an appropriate place to do this?
I think it is too. We were having all these things flying around, and nobody was able to keep it as a record. It's all just these emails. I think it's a perfect subject because it's really crossing over into some of these areas. You know, it's a perfect initial thing to work on.
I
would agree.
Suggestion.
Yeah.
Since the mailing list actually archives all the conversations, if people don't have an issue about sort of the conversation being openly accessible, using the mailing list probably will be best, because that archives everything for perpetuity and access and fine-grained access and search.
And, Peter, I'm getting asked again when Deborah submits things to the mailing list if I'll approve them. And I don't have a password to approve them anyway.
I beg your pardon. I don't think I got
Toby. This is Toby. Within the last 24 hours, Deborah has attempted to send something to the distribution list, and it said it wouldn't post it unless I approved it.
Right. I got a message that it's being moderated. And actually, this whole slew of
conversation with Open Geospatial Consortium, and you know, I wanted to make sure everybody said it was okay to put that stuff up in the great wide open before putting it there. So I don't know. I could clean it up a little bit.
Okay, the two things. You know, first of all, there's a policy issue and there's a sort of system issue. Which one are we talking about? Are you asking Toby whether he feels okay for you to post, or did you actually post?
I am okay with proposing my stuff. That's
right,
right.
Right. Or did you actually post?
If we're going to have an open conversation through the Onslaught mailing list,
the BSP mailing list.
Every conversation is waiting for one or two people to go on, log online and say, oh yeah, I'll let this one through, then that's going to discourage dialogue and everyone will go back offline again.
I don't think the BSP list is moderated. It's open. I mean, unless someone...
I think it's moderated, however.
Yeah, I mean, I think if someone posts, who's not a subscriber, posts, for example, if you subscribe under one email address and you ended up trying to make a post from a different email address, I mean, that is like someone totally random posting to the list.
Yeah, so that might be the problem, Deborah, is that that you're mailing from a different email address than usual?
Oh, maybe it could be something like that. I don't think it was, but well, I'll clean up some of those things so that we have that on record, and then now here's all these notes. And then, well, should it be, Michelle, do you want to take your four, you know, main prongs of this and put it into its own page then?
I'm wanting to comment.
Yeah. Okay, first, David, go.
Okay, I think number one floor plan is fine. I think number four should be the second one, which is space naming conventions. I'm looking at this in a sort of a chronological order that I might build up a floor plan. So floor plan representation and space naming would be one and two. And of the space naming, spaces in and around the building would be included. But B, first responder naming assigned at event, I think that's a spatial temporal correlation and should not be in the space naming. And C, I'm not sure what associating data back to the floor plan means. But again, one would be, from my point of view, one would be the floor plan, two would be the space naming, and those two would represent the static information that can be prepared well ahead of an incident and be on file. And then two would move to three. Information content would then be the third one, which would then, in addition to the basic floor plan and the spaces being named, you would have the discrete elements that are relevant to safety or response, sensor locations, standpipes, other sorts of things. And again, those first three aspects would be the static reference repository that is referenceable before an incident. Spatial temporal correlations would become the fourth one, and that would be when an incident starts. And then objects with change of, architectural objects, mobile objects, objects with change of state. Anyway, it just seemed to me that space naming should be back towards the beginning.
Yes, those were not in a time address order. They were just a segmentation. So you're right, using the numbers 1, 2, 3 probably wasn't best. But I think putting them in that order makes a lot of sense.
I think
it's also separating what's static and what's dynamic too. So
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You have the static items first.
Yeah, because this is what we would expect of the building owners and their contractors to turn in to the public safety people or the fire people, and then for the fire marshal to go out and to validate. For instance, space naming, you might walk the halls and make sure that the rooms have signage on the doors that are the same as what's on the floor plan. So anything that can bring a reference floor plan up to spec in terms of, recent inspection would represent the static information.
All right. I will take the task of reformatting the focus area deliverable list and turning that around shortly after this meeting onto this page, still with the kind of point assignments of floor plan representation, Dave Coverchell, the naming conventions, Deborah McPherson, and the spatial temporal correlation information, the live information, how it gets correlated back in, Michelle Raymond.
Great.
And so that'll be a page in BSP, like it's a little, you know, a project page.
Yeah, a project page and a subpage for each of those front linked from it, so that each of us has a workspace, and then everyone on this call and whomever you believe should join BSP to participate can participate in the discussion, the forum list, by joining the forum list at discussion threads, and then we can make the updates on those page to so that everyone is aware of what the current state of the discussion is.
And then are we going to base this, David, did you want to use a sample building? Did you say you have something that we could use to as just like a placeholder?
Yeah, I have worked with the University of San Francisco before and have already some samples on the Harney Science Center, which is a fairly large 4 or 5 story building with a lot of hazardous materials and so forth in it within the labs. University of San Francisco facility manager Joe Murphy is more than happy to work with us and provide us, you know, the latest floor plans and maybe even some cooperation in renaming or updating some naming, anything like that, so that we could make a good case study of not a final standard, but here's a starting example of the kind of floor plan that we might expect from the owner, and then take that and talk with the San Francisco Fire Department, the fire marshal, and so forth, make sure that we're accommodating their requirements as well.
And then just see, like, where is it working and where is it keep having the same problems again, and being able to focus on those, that communication. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but I would also encourage someone else to come up with a building so that we're not just doing one, but we're doing two. I think we'll get a lot of benefit from doing two in parallel.
Would it make any sense to consider something that Kimona Muma?
I would think he's actually much more qualified in this area than I am, but that would be great.
Well,
I'm thinking
Bob, when we go out there, maybe we can talk to him about that.
Precisely.
Hey, Rex has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should take it down. I changed my mind. I was going to suggest what Toby suggested.
Okay, Bob, then I know you don't have hand access. I'm sensing you want your hand up. Your turn.
I've taken it down. That's the only point I wanted to make. Having a few use cases taken from the actual world, the physical world, and one from the digital world may be stimulating.
And I think that applying the start of, like, David Holmberg had the scenario, if we put some of the scenarios into those buildings, that will also help us.
Right.
As we go from what is static data, what can we put into a common format, what is naming things that differ across areas, and what is information that needs to be overlaid real time. I don't know, Deborah, what you want to do. We're at David's got his hand up now. We're at the 2-hour mark.
Yeah. well, maybe if everybody could just make sort of a closing statement.
I wanted to request that, or suggest that it would be very useful if there were a half page or full page description of this project that could be used to introduce this project to other people like Kimon, and Robert Anderson, in anticipation of seeking their participation or involvement. It's a little unclear to me still, like, who's in charge, if this is a NIST project or an Ontolog project or an OASIS project. But whoever owns the project from an administrative point of view, I think could put out a paragraph or two on what the goals are and who some of the participants are and what the intended deliverables are, so that we could have a framework in order to discuss this. I would right away send it to Robert Anderson and say, this is the project that I talked to you about, and we would like your help in working with NVIMS and IFCs to develop the floor plan, the initial floor plan layout ideas.
Well, I would volunteer to do some part of it, but the thing is, like I said, I'm not a subject matter expert really in these, in EDXL and that kind of stuff. I'm much more from the building side. So I think it should be somebody like Michelle, or if it could be from NIST, you know, if Alan, somebody that was like, you know, knew what they were talking about when it comes to the messaging itself, because I think that's what the real issue is on this project.
Well, I think Alan is appropriate if the motivation for this work is coming from NIST right now.
Well, no, well, no. We're just the fire response side, not the whole world here.
Yeah, for the floor plan working group within NIST, I'm lead on that, and Alan is a member of that, as are you and Deborah and anyone who wants to be there, and we will be reporting back to NIST. I think as far as the larger project for the workspace and ownership of it, that's VSP, the Building Service Performance within Ontolog Forum, and I'll take the lead for this specific project of floor plan for building information exchange.
I'm very happy if we just describe the floor plan portion of the project, just so that I have some boilerplate to introduce the project to people that I might want to consult with.
Right, and then if they're interested in this offshoots and all these related topics, all of that's there, you know, and at that point they could call up anybody or get walked through, you know, because it does, all of a sudden, if somebody wants to know more about what it is, or they, you know, have these cautionary notes, you know, I mean, OGC said it's very, very hard to start thinking about how EDXL is going to be used and standardized and, you know, part of this whole huge, bigger picture. So there will be materials on those kind of questions. But if this particular thing is about getting stuff in and out of the building, that makes sense to me to just keep it at that, because we'll have other information around, supporting information if needed. So, Michelle, you'll be the lead.
I'll be the lead, and as a requested, point people for specific things. And, Alan, I would like you to be our specific NIST liaison as well as participant. To make sure that we're meeting the NIST BFRL workshop goals.
That's fine, Michelle.
Does that work for you?
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay, good. That makes sense. That's good. Okay, well, we're over the time. Did anybody want to say anything to wrap up, or should we just keep going later on?
Is our chat going to be recorded in as kind of an archive?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to now select all, copy. I'll put that on the bottom of these notes here. Yeah.
Great.
Okay, save. So everything's on this conference call page, plus Peter's recorded it, and my stepson has a software that he knows how to compress it and clean it up. So I'll, you know, get that from Peter and get the audio up there, too, so if anybody wants to listen on it backwards. then they could do that.
Yeah, Deborah,
sure
do you copy all again? I just made a last post.
Pardon me?
Yeah, I just made a last post on the chat board to answer Rex's questions.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Okay.
I didn't...
Alan, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I'm a little confused. I've been trying to chat with Peter and Rex and Toby. I'm not sure if I did anything right here, but somebody mentioned earlier that there's, you post to some list and everybody gets your information and kind of chat via email. And I was trying to get on that list, but I'm not sure if I did it right.
I don't have your email. So
may I answer you? Possibly.
Peter, yeah.
Yeah, Peter here. Okay, Alan, there are two messages on the chat board sent by VNC2. I mean, I was typing on there without realizing it was in my name, that the first one points to a link there that tells you how to join the BSP forum list. So BSP actually is a working group or a community that works on building services performance, which is incubated in the overall Ontolock workspace or collaborative work environment.
Peter,
yeah.
When I click on that link, it takes me to the page that we've all been looking at, which is the Building Service Performance Conference Call. Is that where I'm supposed to be? And I don't see anything that says sign myself up with.
Oh, did I give you the wrong link?
Oh, no, the second one, I clicked on that, it went to the same place again.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Allow me to send you the link again then. Sorry.
Well, you can add me. I just gave my email on there.
Oh, you did.
Okay.
Fantastic.
At the bottom.
Then I'll add you, but I'll post that link again for you. Sorry.
Okay.
Well, this has been very helpful. And thanks everybody
for taking
time.
Are we going to schedule another meeting?
Pardon? Yeah, we should. When should we? Like a week from now or 2 weeks from now?
Let's
2 weeks would be better for me.
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
2 weeks. 2 weeks is definitely better. However, note that Fridays are typically the OOR, the Open Ontology Repository, uses this line. No, they're earlier in the day. So is that a feasible time for us, Peter, to put on the meetings?
The week of December 8th through 12th, I am out of the office.
Ah.
So that's 2 weeks, right?
Correct.
But you can move on without me. I mean, if that's best.
Well, and I'm hoping to meet with Bob out in California on the 17th and 18th, and it would be great if we could go talk with Kimona Numa. So if that's before, I'm leaving for that on the 12th. Maybe we could do that, have another call before that or after that, I guess. What do you think, Bob?
What do we need to accomplish before your conference call?
Well, I think the statement that David was asking about would be good.
Yep.
Also, I'm hoping to talk with Kimona directly in the maybe next week.
All right. How about I send out the update of the statement? And I need to pull that off of my hard drive or my backup drive, and the list from the modified list from today's conversation on what are our goals and deliverables, reordered as David suggested, and at that point we can say I'll put out a when would people be available message, and then. Do the reserve the time for this line within Ontolog, if and when that's appropriate.
Yeah.
Right.
So
let's leave Michelle, you were asking me a question. Right.
The question, Peter, originally was if the 2 p.m. time slot on Fridays was. Available because it backs up against the the OOR.
Yeah, the normal OOR time is like, I mean, for East Coast, is like 12 to 1:30. So two would be good if you want to do a Friday.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I'm probably speaking Central time, so for you it would be one. Let's just leave that as an open question, and I will make sure that it doesn't overlap or abut too closely with an existing meeting.
Oh, good.
And I'll send that out before going back, before we're back Monday. So today I'll send out the initial, this is what I believe we're covering. And, oh, Lord have mercy. That's on the recording now, isn't it? I just had my hard drive reformatted, and now I'm still getting the virtual memory too low message. Something's really not good with my computer. It's a good thing I've backed everything up. So I will pull things off, back up, post it, and that will be the stimulus to discuss what needs to be done between now and our next meeting and when that next meeting should be.
Great. That sounds perfect.
Okay.
Well, thanks. And then, this will be, I'll also forward that on to, I know that Carl Reed from OGC is interested in this as well. And he knows Rex from some other stuff too. So I think, you know, having this statement will be helpful, and we'll get it in front of some people that, you know, maybe we can get a lot done.
Mm-hmm. And Deborah, I love your representation of Dave Holmberg's scenario. And when we've got a building, I'd like to see that again put specifically toward that. I think that's a fantastic representation. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, well, thanks. There's a couple of problems with it, though, that I think I understand a little better. You know, I mean, I was thinking some things were happening on radios, and they don't happen on radios, and stuff like that. So I'm going to do some work on it, and I'll get it cleaned up, and that'll be my goal also for the next meeting, is to have a sort of a hybrid of what it is that Alan has sent, and then where that is, and there were some things that were wrong on it, so I'll fix that. And then, I'd love to be able to show that to Kimona Newman if we get the chance to meet with him. That'd be good, along with the statement, and we could say, you know, here's all this information. It's got to go from here to here. And it's real non-standard here, and it needs to be very standard here. How do you do that? So, But, okay,
this is Bob Smith. I've got a real quick question for Alan.
Yes.
Fire departments typically do a post-action report, and your work with NIST, have you studied a number of these, or is there a format that's typically used for a fire department after action report in which issues that we're talking about show up as glaring indications of need?
No, we have not studied that. At least I haven't particularly, but I'm assuming that every fire department that you deal with in every county and jurisdiction is going to be a little bit different. So I'm not sure what you're trying to get at, but certainly we can.
Let us sign off now, guys.
Okay. Bye, Toby.
Okay, bye, Toby. All right.
Yeah, Bob, so I'm not sure what you're trying to get at, but if you have a certain list of questions you want to ask, we can certainly, you know, relay those questions to our fire department that we deal with, which is Montgomery County in Maryland and Fairfax County in Virginia.
Real good. I'll send you an email, Alan.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, and I'll have the notes and look forward to talking more about this in the future.
Yeah, I'll stop the recording here, and I'll post a sort of unedited version of it up in about maybe 15 minutes after I get done with Alan. Bye.
Okay, and then I'll grab that sometime this weekend, and
I'll send you a link, Deborah.
Okay.
Bye.
That'd be great.
Thank you.